Well, I never been to heaven, but I've been to Yuba City. Well, they tell me I was born there, but I really don't remember. In Yuba City, it sounds pretty shitty. What does it matter? What does it matter? Good morning, everybody. That was Three Dog Night coming your way. Yes, that was Three Dog... Well, that was a rendition of Three Dog Night, which was a great band back in the 60s, man. Matter of fact, I always thought that their name came from Inuit culture, like the Eskimos and the guys that rode the sleds, like through the Iditarod and with the dog sleds. And then when it got cold, you know, and they were packed out in the snow there with their dogs. If it got real cold, it was a three-dog night. But upon research, upon further research... it was actually about, it was a name, it was, suggested after reading a magazine article about Aboriginal Australians, in which, they explained on cold nights they would customarily sleep in a hole in the ground while embracing a dingo, and, which is a native species of wild dog out there, if you don't know. But on colder nights they would sleep with two dogs, and if the night were freezing, it was a three-dog night. Yeah. I'm on the road to Shambhala. That's three-dog night. Matter of fact, one of the guys from three-dog night used to service his Nissan Frontier at the dealership I worked at, Mike Alsop. I cornered him one day and I asked him, "Hey, man, you ever hung out with the Beatles?" But he was a little, I don't know, I think he was pretty far removed from a lot of that. And he was a chill dude. And so that's my three dog night story. I wonder, do you think, like I'm out here just chilling at our little paradise out here. They got a naked man ceremony coming up this week. It starts in 2 days, officially starts on Wednesday, which would be tomorrow when this airs. But so I'm out here just scouting around, just doing my hikes in the morning. Do you think dogs freak out when people pick up their shit? You know what I mean? Like when they're, because it's obviously policed very well out here. And so you got these poor dog, and you know, there's a handful of dog owners out here, and then they've got their dogs with them, their dog bags, doggy bag, carrying their little plastic doggy bag. And every time, you know, if you're a dog and every time you take a shit, your favorite human just picks it up and just puts it in the bag, like, wouldn't that kind of jar you psychologically? I don't know. I don't know. Why do people stop short at stop signs? You know, why do people do anything? So I'm officially embedded, though, in the community now. Like, I'm like, this is like a modern day kind of when Hunter S. Thompson ran with the Hell's Angels. Now I'm running with these guys, okay? It's kind of the new chic, right? It's kind of like out here in the woods, but not really. And it's this weird community, and they all on the following Saturday, so a week from last Saturday, they're going to wheel out a giant homemade wooden structure that looks like a Burning Man thing. Out onto the out where they play nude volleyball, or tennis, rather. And about 4,000 drunk naked people will be celebrating and cheering and writing messages of change and growth or evolution and posting it on the Burning Man, on the naked Burning Man. And then they're going to light that bitch on fire. So that's pretty cool. So I got in last week. I pitched my little tent out by the edge of this tree line here. And I'm just watching the whole procession just kind of unfold, take place, set up. Everybody's bringing their stuff in. Yesterday morning was Sunday, and I got to... I did my multiple circuit kind of voyage around this lake here as I watch people shuffle in. And what they do is they set up their see, they've all got their trailers, their air-conditioned nightmares, right? And that, it sounds judgmental. It's not. It's just a funny term, I think. It's what Henry Miller used to call, well, he had a whole book called The Air-Conditioned Nightmare, about touring across the United States and seeing people in their subdivisions and their, you know, their lifeless, characterless existences. But out here, it's quite the opposite. I mean, they wheel around these big trailers, and some are more obviously different scale than others. You know, there's some probably have granite countertops out here and stuff like that, and then there's everyone else, and they're setting up, what they're doing is they set up makeshift little, food booths and, coffee, and, they kind of relegate, I kind of pegged it right, because I think I'm gonna write an article or a small book about this, about just being in this community, because even in this phase of our existence, as we get older, we still tend to trickle into these cliques, which was expressed to me by a couple of these guys I've been hanging out with over here on this side of the lake. And evidently I'm in the gay clique over here, so I'm hanging out with a group of these guys, and one guy came all the way from La Paz, which was fascinating, and he makes scones. He's going to make scones, and for the entire community during the week of Naked Man. It's fascinating. And he was making them yesterday and just distributing them the first batch to see how they turned out. And then, but that's kind of the gig around here, is they set up these, you know, some will have, well, most of them will have like an open bar, like a dry bar that they set up in front of their, trailers or their makeshift community tent. And, serve drinks in the evenings free of charge, making food, scones, coffee in the morning. It's like this weird effervescent aid station for drunks and naked people and naked drunk people. So all my wailing and descriptive ranting about the, the guys with the tribal tattoos, babe, bring me a beer, babe. That's the other clique. There's about three or four of these cliques out here, and they all kind of, and they're cool, and they get along, and nobody gets in anybody's grill, nobody gets anybody's face, nobody confronts anybody about anything, mask, no mask. It's like a weird internal biosphere of, you know, once you cross that gate, man, it's like a reverse Sleepy Hollow. It's like everything's cool. You come through the gate, you chill the fuck out, And everyone, you know, because you can tell, I mean, if you've got any amount of, if you've got any way of judging character, you can see who's who. You know who the Trump supporters are. You know who the liberals are. You know who the gays are. You know who the straights are. You know who the tribal guys are. Babe, give me a beer, babe. And, you know, and then there's just the old fun-loving, just wacky people, you know? That's probably where I fall in, kind of. Wander through the cracks of a little bit of everything. But I don't know. First of all, let me back up. So I want to give my whacked out movie pick. My whacked out movie pick. My whack ass movie recommendation for the week is Young Einstein. Came out, I think, I want to say like 88. Young Einstein, a film made by a guy named Yahoo Sirius, an Australian, speaking of Australian, in the movie he plays Einstein, and he intimates the notion that Einstein was a Australian apple farmer that accidentally discovered splitting the atom in the outhouse of his parents' property and blew up the outhouse. So you know it's going to be a weird one. But it's really good, though. And it's got, like, you know, this guy, Yahoo Sirius, he kind of came and went. He had a good run back in the late 80s. But yeah, just the mere notion that we're supposed to just accept that Albert Einstein was an Australian apple farmer makes perfect sense. And the girl that plays in it is really strangely attractive. And her name is Odile Ecclesio. She has got this real wild, exotic name. And she comes from this island country called Mauritania, which is an island off the island of Africa. Mauritania, look it up. It's an island off of the outskirts of Madagascar, which is an island off the outskirts of Africa. And she plays Marie Curie, who discovered plutonium, radium, and won the Nobel Prize for physics. So, anyway, it's a weird movie, and he, in the end, diffuses this atomic bomb that's been built by the bad guy with his guitar. So, enjoy. And he did a follow-up to Young Einstein called Reckless Kelly, which was a weird historical adaptation, much in the same ilk as Young Einstein. Reckless Kelly was loosely based on the Australian Western folklore surrounding Ned Kelly, who was a real live. I think he was like a Wild West figure, kind of a cult figure, much like Jesse James. He had a gang, the Ned Kelly gang, and if I recall right, his defense was he'd had this cast iron helmet that he made to defend him from bullets from the law. But his name was Ned Kelly. He's a real character, but the movie version, Yahoo Sirius, calls him Reckless Kelly. Matter of fact, Mick Jagger did a movie about Ned Kelly in Australia. I believe he played Ned Kelly. So, there you go. The Australian Jesse James, for all you cats and kittens out there. So, but originally, I was going to do a whole, I don't know, I wanted to go down this kind of road addressing sequels. Sequels to movies, sequels to albums, sequels to life, sequels to everything. The good and the bad. You know, Lethal Weapon 2, I thought was better than the first one. Godfather 2, I would give it a slight nod over the original God. And Godfather, the first Godfather was considered one of the greatest movies ever made. Godfather 2 fucking is badass. Robert De Niro speaks Italian the entire movie. And he's in the whole movie, pretty much. you know, some great sequel, you know, some great remakes, some great song-wise, you know, Sweet Jane by the Cowboy Junkies. Great cover of Sweet Jane from Velvet Underground. But I heard that on a loop repeatedly, just ad nauseum at Tower Books when I worked there in the 90s. Great fucking song, though. Woodstock 2, 99, bad idea, a lot of rage. Kind of foretold a lot of the angst and the anger of our society. You go from Woodstock 69 to Woodstock 99, and it's a troubling pattern. If you remember that little escapade. And then in my own version, finally, the sequel to Meatballs 2, bad idea, but you know what, absurdly funny, because Bill Murray is not in the sequel, Bill Murray is not in Meatballs 2, they actually had an alien, he was an alien, and that decided to land at the summer camp. And when they find him, one of the kids, this kid named Ted, tries to figure out why he's there and who he is. And he goes, meet me, Ted, who are you? And the alien goes, me, Ted. And they go, his name is Meathead? So they call him Meathead the whole movie. So you can just kind of see where this one's going. So there's a lot of good sequels, a lot of bad sequels. God, I still want to get into I want to talk about Blake Edwards as a director, guy that did the Pink Panther movies, this whole series, but I'm gonna have to save that for another. I got too much else to ramble on about here. Ramble on. Sequels, sequels and how they relate to how I ended up being embedded in this nudist colony, waiting for this giant naked Burning Man event to happen in some cataclysmic rite of passage type weird firework, display. It's pretty exciting. But how did I get here? I'm going to tell you. It all started back in my own sequel. After I left Nissan, I went on a vacation in March of 2015 from Nissan when I was working there. And I'd been there for about 6 years. And I went on a vacation, and I never went back because it was just, I was at a crossroads and I didn't know what I was going to do. I didn't know if I wanted to sell cars. I was just burnt out. 6 years. Going hard, you know, going hard in the paint, month to month, every month, you go from hero to zero, you know, you might be the top dog on the 31st of the month, but on the next day, on the first of the month, man, you're right back to nothing, right back to zero, starting over, you know, do it all again, you know, see if you can do it again, bet you can't, and, you do that for 6 years and it has a tendency to weigh on you a little bit. And I was, in typical fashion, like most car guys, I feel like they're getting slighted. They pull up 10 stakes and they leave, and they get in this bad habit of just jumping from dealership to dealership. And so inevitably, you know, they'll take off for like, you know, if you're at Nissan, you'll go to Chevy, Toyota, Honda, and then when they report back, they'll be like, oh, this is way better over here, pays better, pay structure's better, bonuses, you know, grass is always greener, and then it usually is bullshit. I mean, you may think it is because it's new scenery, it's a new lease on life. You think it's like, this is where this, I was getting screwed the whole time, but it's just, it's a different venue. It's just different headaches, but it's the same, like anywhere, you know what I'm saying? So my sequel came in the form of Toyota, and when I left Nissan, I, you know, fucked around and didn't know what I was going to do. Tried to start another business. And was doing all right, but the reality of, you know, having kids and stuff like that reared its ugly head, and I went back. I kept getting calls. You gotta come over here and work for Toyota. Hubert was telling me, come to Toyota. Hubert was already over there. So one day, I'm like, fuck it, I'm just gonna go over there and I'll just do an interview. And, So I went over and met with, at this point they had closers. And, they had three closers. They were team leaders who were the closers for a group of between five and eight guys on each team. And I met with this guy, Alan. Shout out to Alan. Alan Gugugulen. Gugugulen. Good Assyrian. He's funnier than shit. I miss that guy. But he was the closer for this one particular team who decided, you know, he'd interview me, and interview was easy enough, you know, pretty straightforward stuff. I mean, if you've been in the business long enough, you just know what's going on. And then you just kind of are introduced to their way of doing things with a closer. So you know, you're out on point, you're calling your ups, up blue, up red. Even the gay guys I hang out with, they're bullshit at night with. He was telling me how when he bought his Prius, he was called up blue. the salesman told him he'd called him as an up. I'm like, yeah, you were an up, bro. So you familiarize yourself with the way they do things, and that was it. And I thought the interview went quite well. I wasn't overly concerned about it. The minute I left, I got high as fuck. I smoked a big giant blunt. And I was on my way to the gym when Alan called me and said, yeah, you know what, come on in, we're going to hire you, and we just come on and do the HR paperwork. I'm like, holy fuck, okay. And I'm like, son of a bitch, because that, you know, they didn't test. They didn't do drug testing at Nissan, which I didn't find out until after the fact. It didn't really matter, because I wasn't a smoker when I started in Nissan, but it soon turned me into one. And then, so what I did, I'm like, fuck, so I'm panicking, so I call Hubert. I'm like, bro, I just smoked like the fattest blunt ever. Like, I'm officially in a reggae band, bro. And they want me to come in. What, I need to get some of that synthetic pee. He's like, okay, just go over to such and such. I'm like, okay, all right, fine. So I kind of made up an excuse. I called Alan. I said, okay, I just got done at the gym. Let me shower up. Buy me a little time. I went over. I burst into a head shop, a smoke shop. I said, man, I need some fake pee ASAP. I've never done this. Never tried it. And these guys are so, you know, potheads, they're just cool, man. You know, they help you. They're just like, they get it. You know, if you don't have weed, they'll give you weed. If you're smoking, they'll offer you. If you need fake synthetic urine, they're down. It's all good. This guy even showed me, like, how to activate it, what to do in the, you know, when, well, Hubert then lined me up. He's like, what did he say? How did he, the whole structure of it is like, you go in, open the bag, pour it in the cup, P pee, and then you pee in the toilet, so that they know like you're actually peeing. But you got to the bag of fake pee has to be body temperature. So Hubert said, you know, store it in your sock, so that your body heat will warm it up when you walk into the test. I'm like, I don't know, man. My ankles are pretty cold. I'm a cold ankle guy. So he's like, I'd heard what somebody else told me, like, just shove it in your, down by your balls, in your underwear. I'm like, okay, done. So I get in there, and I'm carrying this synthetic bag of piss underneath my balls. I walk in for the test. The shit starts sliding out. So it looks like I have like my balls are the shape of like SpongeBob SquarePants or something. But I made it in. I go through the procedure. I'm resigned to whatever kind of comes of it. And I got confirmation call after the fact. Oh, you're good to go. Let's start you on whenever. So I work for Toyota. Went to work for Toyota, and that was a good time. That was a lot of fun. Those, you know, car salesmen, it's a universal thing that they're just a bunch of fucking savages and psychotics and misfits, you know, who just can't assimilate into regular society. And that's who these guys were, too. We'd be standing out on the line just talking shit, and, you know, as customers would leave, we'd go, you know, you'd just yell stuff in their direction as customers would leave. You go, hey, bro, you lift, bro? You lift, bro? You lift, bro? Until they turn around, and then you make it look like you're talking to your buddy. Just bullshit, stupid shit like that. And, hey, you drop something. Hey, you drop something. They'd stop, turn around, look down, and then you just kind of look up in the sky. Like, just sophomore humor. Bullshit, you know. You smoke weed, you'd sell cars. And even though it was like a new lease on life, pun intended, I only stayed there for about 9 months. I enjoyed it thoroughly. But it was longer. It was like you get there at 8, you leave at 9. So, but you had more customers. Toyota, by and large, you know, it was like 3-1. You know, our Memorial Day was just a slaughter fest. You know, we'd sell like 50 cars on a Saturday. You know, it was insane. A Nissan across the street, literally across the street, where my buddies were, they'd sell like, you know, 15, 16, we'd sell like 40, 45. But it was three times the amount of people, three times the amount of salesmen. I mean, guys, it went back to the old school way of like just almost literally fighting for customers. I saw two guys go at it in front of a customer. They called, one guy was sure he called it. The other guy's like, no, bro, it's mine, right in front of the customer. As they're sitting in their car, he's like, nah, it's mine, bro. He's like, you feeling froggy? You better hop then, boy. You feeling froggy? Let's go. Like, these guys are going to throw down right in front of the customer they called. It was kind of entertaining. But, yeah, regardless of the fact that it was a new set of rules, new faces, new system, easily adaptable, enjoyable, less training. I mean, the training was really just, this guy, Bill Updegraff, was just this nice guy, but retired teacher, just kind of phoned it in. We'd go over like, you know, new trim models and stuff. And it was, you do a tiny little walk around. It wasn't, if you got picked, and if not, you're like, eh, whatever. Like, it was so because it's Toyota, like, I think the mindset is, like, they sell themselves. Hey, it's a Toyota. Like, hey, I'm here for... I literally had a customer that just resigned herself to buying a new Camry every time the new model came out, regardless. She's like, I'm not even sure I really like this new body design, but I just get it every time, you know? Every time the new model came out, I'm like, wow. Like, that's bizarre. But that's, you know, that's what you do. What color do you want? You know? I mean, it wasn't even, I don't know. Anyway, interesting stuff. But that place kind of ran its course with me. And then coincidentally, my dad was kind of going through some stuff up north in Sacramento. And upon further inquiry with my mom, he was having some health struggles. So I just decided, you know, okay, this is the time of my life. This is when I'm going to, like, I'm really just going to kind of free myself of the moorings, you know, pull up these tent stakes and just free myself from kind of a conventional life as we know it. And I went up to just kind of get go closer to them to make sure, like, because, you know, at this point, they're in their late 60s. And I just wanted to be of service to something, somebody, something. So I made my way up there, and I was driving an electric, all-electric, I was leasing a Nissan Leaf at the time. Yeah, I was working for Toyota, driving my electric Nissan Leaf. Like, what a douchebag. But, so I load that bitch up. I head up there to my buddy. I call my buddy, Eric, who's a former police officer, living up in Folsom. I'm like, hey, dude, I need to crash at your place for just a little bit. And he's like, come on up. And my buddy Eric, man, he's the quintessential Trump supporter. But so what? It's my buddy. It's my buddy Eric. I've known this guy since high school. He's the one that, you know, introduced me to, like, track and field news, running, Sports Illustrated articles on Pat Porter, the, you know, how the greats trained, how the greats, you know, their mindset worked, you know. He told me about Ron Clark, the Australian distance runner, Billy Mills, winning the 10,000 meters in Tokyo. I mean, it's my buddy. He was like, Eric was, like, Eric, I was always over there in high school, like 15, 16 years old, just hanging out, just being like Eddie Haskell, just being that annoying kid. Cause I lived on the other side of Fair Oaks Boulevard. And so I just, you know, within walking distance, I'd always show up there and just kind of poke around and just be that annoying neighbor kid kind of. And so he's, yeah, good friend. And just opposite philosophy, that's all. It just, it wasn't even anything that I really cared about. I mean, he's got his thing, I got my thing. But he was generous enough to let me crash there. And so I stayed there for like 8 months. But it was cool, like, him and his brother, I've known these guys since, yeah, literally, like, for 30 years. I sold Eric, like, two vehicles, two Nissan Frontiers. Yeah. He'd gone through his whole life, you know, he got married, had a daughter, got a divorce, you know, retired off of being a SAC PD. Went into, I think he was in dispatch when I was crashing over there. But and then Ethan worked for Rayleigh's. I believe it was Rayleigh's. Yeah. And So just hang out. These guys, we'd bullshit, talk movies, just get stupid, you know? Because when you get down to it, you know these guys as younger, as their younger selves. You don't know them as that Trump supporter or that liberal or me or some goofball or some guy that stole your girlfriend or whatever. You just, now it's just your, this is the buddy you had when you're young, you know, when you're like simple, carefree, you know, you didn't really know much about the world and didn't care. So that was cool. And ultimately, you know, they didn't have to take me in, they did. And I'm eternally grateful because it was a weird time in my life. And I wanted to keep an eye on my folks. And then my lady also had moved up. She moved up to Elk Grove at the time. So she was about 30 minutes away. And so it was kind of in conjunction with that as well. So it was my folks, her, my career, crossroads, and just trying to rationalize a lot of what was going on at the time. My kids were doing great. You know, they luckily had a good mom that, you know, kept them centered and focused and stable in an environment where they didn't have to move around a lot, which is important. So I just kind of like fucked around and I dabbled in a few. I didn't know what I was going to do. I first went to work as a special finance guy over at Roseville Toyota, and that was a monster. That was ridiculous. I mean, all special finance does is like they deal with the real troubled credit cases. They basically like bring you in. They tell you to, you know, if you could, most of these guys couldn't finance the steam off a hot dog, you know, and that's okay. I mean, again, we all face crossroads in our life. We all make bad decisions. We all do stuff that's kind of counterproductive and sets us back a ways. But the whole idea with special finances is bring them in anyway. Bring them in, because if they got down payment, we got them a deal. And you just spend your whole day just trying to find the right car that you got the right amount of money in, that books out properly. You want to get them in a car that we took in $3,000 back a book so that the bank will finance them, you know, and you can still make money. But there was very few of those. And these poor roaches, they're called roaches in the business. They just, again, their credit was so bad we couldn't take their cash. It was bad. It was so bad. And I just ended up walking away. I just didn't want to be, in the car business anymore. I was that SpongeBob that was just saturated. I didn't have any more room in my body for any more water as a sponge. There was nothing left in the tank for my aspirations as a car guy. And the new thing was, at the time, was digital marketing. And I went to, and so I just took a leap, and I went to work for this outfit in Folsom. I did a couple months stint for Greenpeace as a contractor, hustling up memberships for Greenpeace. And boy, that was, look, I'm all for saving the planet, but these guys were just too much. I wanted to hang from the bridges and stop the big oil tankers in Portland going out the Columbia River and dangle from the bridge as the oil tankers were trying to pass underneath and stop these big oil tanker ships and in protest. But the reality is you're just kind of out on foot, knocking on doors, hustling up memberships like a fucking Amway salesman. It's horrible. So that came and went too, but I parlayed that into this gig as a digital marketing guy. And I started to learn digital marketing. And that was cool too, but again, it was just a hustle. It's just, you know, you make about 200 calls a day. You call dealerships that don't want to hear from you. This was designed to sell digital marketing banner ads and so forth to car dealerships, which is a great, you know, if anybody needed them, it was them. So you just cold call all day. And but it was a good product, but it was like that fucking annoying bullshit that we all kind of can't stand now, where, you know, the minute you start talking about a product or a car, all of a sudden those banner ads start popping up on your phone, and that's what this bullshit was. So I was at the epicenter. I was at the source of the neuroses here. I was in the eye of the storm, and my stint over my buddy Eric's was kind of running its course as well. I mean, there's, you know, there's generosity, then there's like, all right, fool, I gotta get my own place. So I ended up taking I rented a place over down around the corner in Folsom with these swingers. And, you know, I didn't know they were swingers. Their ad didn't say, hey, you know, come rent our place, you know, because we're swingers. But they informed me of that when I was there. And I'm like, I don't give a shit. I mean, swing away, you know. Do what you got to do. But they were all, like, very... the swingers were... It was like fat swingers. Yeah, they were all quite large swingers, so... I just wouldn't. They had their swinger part. You know, they were cool people. They were really nice people. My lady wasn't having much to do with that. When we finally agreed to for me to go move in over there, they were throwing a swinger party. And what they do, they had a running club, so they would go running, these big fat swingers, and then they'd come back and they'd turn on the hot tub and they'd all get naked, these fatties, and they'd just drink beer and just swing. So I took my lady over there for a party. What, I guess it was a swinger party, and they're whipping their big fat cans out and just, hey, do you like my tits and shit like that? And because I'm easily amused, you know. Of course I like the tits. My lady wasn't as amused. So that put a little strain on things. So that situation didn't last long. And the digital marketing wasn't... basically, the company was... it was great. It was a great outfit to work at. It was very... very loose. You know, you could wear whatever you want. You know, it's not a button-up shirt. It's not a tie place. It's like the guys were a bunch of potheads, but they got the job done. They sold some product and had a good time doing it. But again, it was more sales. It was just sales, sales, sales. It's always sales. If it's Greenpeace, it's sales. If it's special finance and Toyota, Roosevelt, Toyota, it's sales. It's digital marketing, it's sales. I'm tired of sales. I'm not selling anything. You know, like Lloyd Dobler said in Say Anything, I don't want to buy, sell, or process anything. And I don't want to process anything bought or sold. And I don't want to sell anything bought or processed. So I'm just going to learn kickboxing and hang with your daughter. So... And that's what I did. So, so my sequel just kept going and had chapter after chapter after chapter, and but it all kind of culminated into, you know, my lady and I, for all of our ups and downs, you know, we hung in there for each other and helped each other where we needed to. She helped me. For sure. And then when I could help her, I would help her. Just kind of getting through things, you know, dealing with things. You know, if it's family, if it's rent, if it's car payments, if it's food, if it's just day-to-day, just, you know. And she ended up taking a job at this dealership. Well, when I was doing digital marketing, one of the companies we did it for was Folsom Buick GMC. And they were hiring for their internet department, which is basically just, again, more cold calling. You call like 500 people. You'd schedule sales appointments or service appointments, and she and I talked her into doing that because we were running the interviews. Because the owner of our company, this guy Jeff Garcia, good dude, big Reagan fan. I don't know why, because he's Hispanic and he's in Folsom, and I think he thinks he's white, but he's not. And because Folsom is very white, and but in a nice way. It's like, yeah, you know, we're white country rodeo types, but we'll talk to you all. And he thinks he's down with them, and he is. He's a great guy. He raises a lot. He's a big fundraiser for the Folsom community. He does a lot for. You can see him on the news every year, and Channel 3 News. They round up, you know, thousands and thousands of turkeys for the homeless. He's just a great guy, but for whatever, well, he was an ex-Marine as well. And for some reason, he just loves Ronald Reagan and the Pittsburgh Steelers. But anyway, so he knew Joe Smith, the owner of Folsom Buick GMC and Folsom VW. And so we were running he was interviewing people for the job, and I told her to come down, you know, and just tell him you know me and that you know the car business and that, you know. And she got hired on easily enough. And this was in October of 2016. And by December of 2016, I got dragged to the Christmas party of Folsom Buick GMC. And at this drunken free-for-all of a Christmas party up at Siena in El Dorado Hills, the owner, Joe Smith, talked me into going to work for him over at Folsom VW. He said, come by, have an interview, come talk with me in my office. I'm like, oh, okay, fine, Jesus, okay. So I go in there, hanging out in his office. It's like, he goes, Joe Smith is a black gentleman. Nicest guy in the world. Doesn't know how to run a car dealership, but he's the nicest guy in the world. I really like the guy, even though I don't think he thinks I'm a moron, but I went in there and I'm in his office and we're talking about John L. Sullivan, the owner of Roseville Toyota, and what a tool bag he is, and how every, you know, owner meeting for dealers at the NADA, he's out there just ripping farts so that the rest of the owners can smell how rich his farts are. And he goes, so how do you like it? How do you like being here? I go, man, it's like when chocolate met peanut butter, brother. I don't know why I said that, but it seemed to click with him, and he hired me. It was in sales again. So I went down to Folsom VW to do sales, and I kind of enjoyed it. It had been a couple years. It had only been a year, Jesus. But I was back doing my thing, strutting my stuff with a bunch of mental defects over at Folsom VW. And I'll tell you something, if there was ever a place to work that was safe from COVID, it was Folsom VW. Like nobody went there. Like if you were in the witness protection program, that's where you would work, because nobody showed up there to buy a car. It was a ghost town. All the ad revenue went to Folsom Buick GMC, and Folsom VW were just kind of left to wither. But that's what made it enjoyable. I didn't have to deal with these assholes. But that's when I learned about VWs and how much I forgot about VWs, how much I enjoyed VWs, and what a fun product it is. And but that's what kind of brought me back around full circle. I stay there a year, and but all the people that I did talk to, the VW crowd's very much like it's similar to like the Subaru crowd, you know, the whole determinism of car buying is embedded in these people like Subaru owners. They're just vociferous. Their vociferous allegiance, their undying loyalty to this brand is very similar to VW. VW people love their VWs. But they're all kind of like these interesting, like kind of ex-hippies, maybe a little overeducated. Not all of them. It breaks ranks with the Subaru. I think Subaru, it's by law, you have to be an overeducated white guy from UC Davis. You have to have gone to UC Davis. And you have to have 3 masters. But VW, their regulations are a little looser. So I would talk to these people, and I'd run into people like this one guy. He had ridden his bike the entire length of the Great Alaskan Highway. We're talking over like 1,100 miles. And the Great Alaskan Highway, which goes up through Canada and then into Alaska, it's the land connection, the land route connection from the contiguous U.S. to Alaska, is primarily gravel roads. And this motherfucker, I spent an afternoon talking to him about it. He's like, yeah, I rode my bike up the Alaskan Highway. I'm like, what the fuck? You serious, man? Like, there's moose and bears and shit. And, you know, you bike for a couple, 300 miles and then throw a tent up and... like, fuck. But it kind of it opened up my mind a little. I'm like, wow, like, people do that shit. Like, and he was an older guy. He was an older guy that said, fuck it, you know, that's what I'm going to do. And it wasn't even like, you know, there was no, like, GoFundMe around it. There wasn't any kind of, like, Instagram pictorial. There wasn't any kind of, like, motivational YouTube video that was inspired by it. It was just this dude who wanted to take his bike, ride all the way up to Alaska, and he did it. Fuck, good for him. That's fucking awesome. And no agenda. That just fascinates me. So as I started camping around Folsom, you know, I've always, you know, ever since I met my lady, I kind of got back into camping. You know, we'd camp out at Half Moon Bay with the kids. We'd camp at Folsom, Beals Point. I started getting in, you know, enjoying it and doing it a little more, you know, often, even during the week when I would work. And so I started looking around for, like, good local spots, and I found this place, Laguna del Sol. And I'm like, what? It's a fraction of the cost. Like, it's dirt cheap to camp out here. I'm like, well, what's the catch? Oh, it's a nudist spot. It's like Booze and Buddies. It's like that show Booze and Buddies with Tom Hanks and Peter Scolari. It's like, the rent's real cheap, but you got to dress like a woman. So, go ahead with your own life. Leave me alone. Da-da-da-da. Keep it to yourself, it's my life. Remember, that was the theme song, Booze and Buddies, where Tom Hanks got his start. You know, he's from Concord. He was born in Concord, California. He went to American River College. Local boy. Good old Tom Hanks. I hate Forrest Gump, though. Fucking hate that movie. My buddy Eric loved it, but I couldn't stand it. So anyway, people like that fascinate me. So I'm out here. I'm getting ready for Naked Man. They're going to wheel this gigantic monolith out, and all these naked people, like this group, this club I'm hanging with, dude. I don't know why I'm hanging with the gays, but it's just, they're cool, they're entertaining, you know, they say whatever comes to their head, it's funny, they're just unrestrained. And but yeah, again, like one of the other guys, he drove all the way up from La Paz, not Cabo, but La Paz. Like, that's, I love shit like that. La Paz is way the fuck, that's where Old Man and the Sea took place, you know, Ernest Hemingway. Old fishing village, although it's not an old fishing village anymore. According to this guy, there's 350,000 people up there. But he drove up the peninsula and had no problem with it. You know, I've heard stories over the years, you know, you shouldn't drive the Baja Peninsula, there's banditos. You know, you gotta know the rules, know the protocol, be safe, pack a gun. He's like, no, man. No, you don't need to do that. It's the most beautiful drive in the world. You do. You just be courteous. Be a human being. That's what it was. I ran into a guy that at Nissan who told me he routinely, every year, he would drive down the Baja Peninsula. He was looking for a vehicle to do that. I thought it was so fascinating. But that's the kind of shit that just gets me excited, you know? Driving up from La Paz to come to some weird nude version of Burning Man, you know? And just see this weird tribal thing happening. But it's happening, man. It's happening this... It's starting this Wednesday. People are starting to trickle in. You know, So I got my stuff set up out here. I'm ready to rock. And it's fascinating. I'm watching everybody kind of just get their shit put together, set up their booths, making their drinks, and it's all going to just build into this climactic frenzy on Saturday. And, speaking of the Olympics, I just want to touch on that real quick, man. So our boy Javon Harrison, it looks like he won the long jump. Did he win the long jump? He only got fifth in the high jump. No, it's fifth or seventh. He was out of the medals in the high jump. But good for him, man, to qualify for both those events. Fuck, hell yeah. Let's see, Woody Kincaid, our man, finished out of the medals. He was like 11th or 12th, but Grant Fisher was 5th. Only 3 seconds off the winner. The winner was 27:43, 10,000 meters. He was 27:46. Which was the fastest time my hero Pat Porter ever ran in 10,000 meters, but that was back in the 80s. So those times are still competitive today. Particularly, that was probably a tactical race that he ran. But good. Shout out to Grant Fisher, 5th in the 10,000 meters. And we got some good stuff coming up. We got Emma Coburn coming up in the 3,000 meter steeplechase. She's one of the contenders. She made it through her heats. We got second in the 100 meters. Man, some fucking Italian dude just came out of nowhere, runs 9.80. What an upset. Trayvon Bromell, he was last. I don't know what happened. I'm just looking at updates. I don't watch the shit, and I don't really want to hear the narrative on why Simone Biles dropped out or quit, or this guy didn't make it through the heats, or this guy's, you know, got four different types of, you know, shoes on, and who gives a fuck? Like, once that gun goes off, man, that's what's happening. And, you know, but shout out to these guys, you know, good for them, man. Let me think what else happened. So we weren't as dominating as we typically are in the field events or the sprints, but, you know, that's what happens when you cycle off the roids and the PEDs, man. It's a rough world out there. Or when the rest of the world catches up with you. Right, Lance Armstrong? Oh, Jesus. Oh, Jesus. Who said that? But anyway, that's, I'm still living out my sequel right now, brothers and sisters. I'm just sitting here in a tent. I got my Tom Robbins books. I got my fucking almonds. What a fucking hippie. Shut the fuck up. Anyway, enjoy the rest of your day. I'll keep you guys posted as far as the shenanigans going on out here. I'm having a good time. It's just chill, man. It's a different world. It's its own thing. Knock on wood, there's no battle lines drawn. There's the cliques without the tribes. It's cliquey without the tribes. There's no ugliness, you know, everyone, you walk by everybody, they just say hi, you know, regardless what they look like, what they wear, what kind of, if they got a cowboy hat, if they got an Indian headdress, if they're riding around on a fucking unicycle, it doesn't matter, man. It's good, man. It's cool, man. We all just got to get along, man. Like that, man. But, Next update, I will clue you guys in on what's going on. It'll probably record in a couple days and then be out next Thursday just prior to the cat. It's going to be like Woodstock. It's going to be nuts out here. There's going to be a sea of tents, naked bodies climbing over each other. I'm looking forward to it. Good, wholesome family entertainment. And, yeah, that's a wrap. So, anyway, I'll talk at you all later. Arrivederci, babies.